You're listening to MoneyWeb at Midday.
Now, as South Africa heads into peak party season, a chilling and worrying trend is starting to emerge. More and more insurance claims are being rejected because drivers were found to be under the influence, sometimes without a blood test ever having been taken. Now, the Ombud says insurers only need to prove intoxication on, and I quote, a balance of probabilities, using everything from witness statements to cell phone data and even bank slips. It's a stark reminder, I think, that one bad decision can leave motorists financially exposed for life. Well, I want to look at the rules, the myths, and maybe the risks that many drivers don't seem to understand. And my guest tonight is Idide Teixeira McKinnon, lead ombudsman of the non-life insurance division at the National Financial Ombudsman. Idide, a very warm welcome to you. I've got to ask myself the question, do we fully as South Africans understand that insurers don't need a blood test to prove intoxication? And I would imagine that to an extent, maybe public ignorance is part of the problem that we're going to discuss.
Absolutely correct, Jeremy. I think there is, in a lot of the submissions made by complainants to our office, is that the insurer never obtained. There was never a blood alcohol or breathalyzer test that was conducted on me, and therefore the insurer must settle my claim. There is absolutely the misconception that that is all the insurer needs to rely on to reject a claim on this basis. Not the case. They only need to establish on a balance of probabilities, and they can do that by looking at and providing circumstantial evidence, such as witness statements, tracking data, cell phone data, for example, that places you, you know, at a pub, at a shebeen, so in your whereabouts, so creating a case of driving under the influence.
I understand the notion of balance of probabilities, but how do you prevent insurers from abusing the concept when often the evidence can be ambiguous?
So obviously we look at this evidence very carefully and we call for it ourselves. We are not just going to rely on what an insurer says is the case. We want to listen to the recordings. We want to see the tracking data. We want to see the bank statements. We want to see video footage. Often insurers rely even on that and how the accident happened to build a case. We look and scrutinize all of that evidence. We need to satisfy ourselves that that is indeed what the evidence shows. So often what we do find is that assessors will ask leading questions of police officials. Instead of asking what was the driver's demeanor, they will, for example, say, did the driver have bloodshot eyes? Was the driver unstable on his or her feet? Slurred speech. So they ask leading questions, and then officers and other witnesses often fall into the trap of saying yes, 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 to support whatever case and whatever agenda they have. And we're not just going to accept that evidence. Scrutinize it very carefully. We look at the case law that is applicable in the case. And then once we've satisfied ourselves, we make a decision on a balance of probabilities.
Do you think, given the volume of rejections, we are facing an increasingly serious behavioral problem or an education problem when it comes to drinking and driving, or maybe a combination of the two, probably?
I think it's a combination of the two. You know, in other warnings to consumers based on the trends that we see, we've often encouraged, you know, drivers to use e-hailing services. You know, 10, 15 years back, these weren't available so readily, or buddy systems. A lot of insurers even encourage a buddy system, or the use of e-hailing services. So it really is, I think, a behavioral thing. And the fact that we've seen an increase in this trend in our office this year, again, you know, for a few years, it wasn't one of the leading trends. It's become again a leading trend. So it's definitely behavioral. And it doesn't matter sometimes how much we try and caution drivers, and based on our cases and what we see in our office, the trend has emerged again, which is very concerning for us and the industry. It also gives the insurance industry, obviously, a bad name. It's already a grudge purchase in the eyes of many consumers. So we try through our communications to play our role, our small role, in trying to educate consumers.
How often do you actually overturn insurers' decisions?
So the general overturn rate in the life division and in the NFO is around 20%. So in 20% of cases that come before us, we're able to overturn a decision or a stance or, you know, some aspect of the decision in favor of the complaint. But in 80%, no matter how hard we try and look, perhaps to try and assist, we simply can't. We are bound also by the contract, the law, and even when we apply our fairness and equity jurisdiction, there simply aren't grounds to exercise that.
Do you think there's a case to be made that we maybe need to reconsider how insurance exclusions are being communicated, given how devastating a rejected claim can be?
So there's already, you know, several obligations on an insurer to communicate exclusions or circumstances in which benefits will not be paid. That has been incorporated into the policyholder protection rules, which form part of the Insurance Act. There are already a lot of obligations on insurers to bring provisions to policyholders' attention, more so those that are unusual, but driving under the influence is not considered an unusual policy exclusion. It's been in the market for almost as long as policy wordings have been in the market, especially in our market. And one mustn't forget that this isn't only a contractual exclusion or obligation. It is also, you know, a legal requirement that you do not drive whilst you're under the influence of alcohol.
Just a quick one. What's the number one mistake that drivers make after an accident that would result in a rejected claim?
Trying to flee the scene of the accident and providing the insurer with untrue and incomplete information. And those are the two grounds, in fact, that insurers rely on when they can't prove the exclusion of driving under the influence on a balance of probabilities. Often they then fall back onto other provisions in the policy, and they're better able to sustain those rejection reasons than DUI, for example. So there are other ways that insurers can avoid liability in terms of the contract.
Well, you can't say we haven't been warned. Edith Teixeira-McKinnon, thank you very much indeed at the National Financial Ombudsman. I appreciate your time.